Nurses and Reform, Nurses and Respect, Nurses and Prevention. And we're going to take a look at staging and identifying pressure ulcers. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pot Medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody here, especially all of you brand new listeners. I've gotten a lot of emails in over the last week or so from people that are getting ready to start nursing school in the fall, and I think that's great. It's always good to hear from new listeners, and I really want to applaud you because I think that you're on the right track. By looking for information and trying to get a head start and in your knowledge and understanding of what's going to be expected of you when you start nursing school in the fall, I think you're already a step ahead of the game. And that's not a license to slack up at this point, but it does, I think it's important to tell you that I think that's just exactly what you need to be doing, is trying to be proactive and thinking ahead and planning all of the time. And if you continue to do that throughout school and on into your nursing career, I know you're going to be very successful. Of course, for all of you long-term listeners and long-term members here of the Nursing Show community, I want to thank you again for your comments and support and continuing spreading of the word about the Nursing Show, keeping the community growing here. And one of the ways you can do that is to keep in touch with me via the Nursing Show newsletter. You can sign up for that over at the Nursing Show site, just a name and an email address, and you can get updates about what's going on here at the Nursing Show, links to the show notes, links, so you have it all right there in your email box. And that's a great way to also spread the word, because you can forward that email to people who you want to say, hey, check out this show. So it's a great way to keep in touch with the Nursing Show. You can also just send me an email, and any email comments, suggestions, even corrections, we want to make sure we get the best information out there to all of the listeners. So send all of those in to comments@nursingshow.com, and we'll make sure that we respond to you. I respond to every email we get. I just want to make sure that we keep in touch with the listeners. Each and every single one of you are very valuable members of this community, and you are what help make the Nursing Show such a valuable resource for everybody, whether you're a brand new nurse, a nursing school student, or a nurse that's been around and is available to share his or her expertise. Whatever it is, we value you here at the Nursing Show. Speaking of valuing things, I want to let you know that it's important that we keep the Nursing Show here free and available to everybody, and the best way you can help with that is to support our sponsors. Visit their website and check out what they have to say. I try to provide sponsors here for you that are a good mix for what is available for nurses out there, both as nursing and medical programming, as well as other services that might be of interest to you. And so letting them know that you heard about them here on the show by clicking through on the links is a great way to support the Nursing Show and let them know that their message has been heard. All right, let's jump on in and look at the news items I selected for this week's show. And I'll start off with a story I picked up over at medicalnewstoday.com. And actually, I think all three stories are from medicalnewstoday.com. Sometimes that happens. They had a good selection of news items that caught my eye this particular week. We'll start off with the first item, which looks at the studies on nursing workforce and staffing, and some of the findings that figured out that nursing workforce in a hospital setting is critical to the success of healthcare reform. And in fact, that is spread out actually across the community in all of the nursing arenas in which we might find ourselves working. The journal Health Affairs unveiled a series of six studies recently where they looked at the nursing workforce and they examined it in a particular context of health reform as being addressed right now here in the United States. And what they found when they presented this to a group of organizations that are actually championing nursing in America, including the Center to Champion Nursing in America, they found that there were some information being presented that really pointed out how the nursing shortage that right now has kind of gone away because of the economic climate, as older nurses that were planning to retire have not retired, and nurses that were working part-time or working full-time, nurses have returned to the workforce. So we've seen the recession having an effect where it's actually slowed down the urgent need for new nurses somewhat. But this study does point out that is expected to return, that as the economy rebounds, that the people that were going to retire are going to retire, along with the folks that are planning to retire a few years later. Now that the recession is over, they can now plan their retirements appropriately. So we're going to see the return of that, along with the aging population. The number of our patients who will require health care on an ongoing basis will increase. The number of chronic illnesses present in the community will increase as the population ages. And all of these things are going to, again, return us to a state where we are going to need more nurses than we might currently have. So this study really found that building in some component of encouraging an increased nursing workforce was critical to the success of healthcare reform. And I guess those of us in nursing understand this, but because we tend not to gather together and present a united front as much as we might be able to, we don't often let other people know how important that is. I don't think anybody realizes how pervasive the nursing profession is in so many different areas of our lives, whether it is involved in things like school nursing programs or workplace nursing programs, all the way back to the traditional nurse in a hospital setting, and community nursing, health nursing, home visiting nurses. All of these situations are really important aspects of any change in the healthcare system, and nurses are right in the forefront of providing an ability to give some level of healthcare and health response to a patient at a reduced cost than always bringing them into an expensive facility setting. And so I think that we're going to see more and more community-based nursing initiatives and other community-based health initiatives in the future is as a way to control the costs of healthcare that doesn't involve bringing them into a facility, bringing them into another center. So I think we're going to see a return to some kind of home visitation, whether it's house calls, as was performed by the medical profession for years and years until probably 40 or so years ago. And we're going to see a return to that, except I think this time it's going to be more often than not nurses that are doing those house calls. We'll move along into the next item, and I want to extend a kudos to our colleagues down under. The Australian nursing community has been voted the most ethical and honest profession for the 15th straight year running. The Australian Nursing Federation has brought in the annual professions survey that is conducted in that country, and they show that nurses are still considered the most ethical and most honest of all professions on the survey. And this is something that I think is a good thing to have, and certainly we want to be seen as ethical and as honest and trustworthy, because people have to speak with us frankly about very personal and sometimes uncomfortable issues. And certainly they aren't going to be willing to share that with us as healthcare professionals if we aren't perceived as a profession as ethical and honest. So when you say you're a nurse, there should be, you know, people, when you have that perception about your profession, you can just say to somebody, I'm a nurse, and they're automatically going to have at least a loosening of some of that tension about sharing something with you. It doesn't go away completely. You still have to use good communication skills and good patient history gathering techniques, but it doesn't mean that it makes it a little bit easier. And I hope that we have that same perception here in the United States and other places around the world. And it's not something that we just get automatically. It's something that is an ongoing process. And it doesn't mean that just because they won it this year and have won it for 15 straight years, that it wouldn't be something that could be lost very quickly by some well-publicized problems in the nursing profession if they were to crop up. So it's again requires each and every one of us to make sure that we're vigilant, that we can carry ourselves in a professional manner, that we are looking at what the nurses around us are doing and doing our best to forward the principles of nursing in our region and our communities so that we can be proud to be a nurse. And I certainly am, and I hope that the rest of you are as well, and that we can continue to grow the faith that our community and our patients have in what we do, because I think that goes a long way towards helping us to provide the care that people expect us to be able to provide. My final item for the news is a story that I picked up from a report that was presented at the 41st Annual Conference of the Wound, Ostomy, and Continence Nurses Society. And they were looking specifically at ways that the prevalence of pressure ulcers in hospital settings could be reduced. And this particular study was looking at an analysis of a standardized algorithm for identifying and treating the existence of pressure ulcers in the hospital setting and this particular facility. And interestingly enough, by using a standardized algorithm, by using a technique where everyone is on the same page all the time doing the same things, that it is a top-down approach where the people are, we have an expectation of us doing certain things and performing certain interventions for our patients on a regular basis and good analysis and good assessment skills, that this particular group was able to reduce the prevalence of pressure ulcers in their facility by 90%. And that's an amazing turnaround when you think about it. And as the Medicare system has instituted their changes recently, and that they will not be paying for the treatment of stage 3 and stage 4 pressure ulcers because of the fact that they are often presented during a healthcare setting, stay in a facility, whether it's a nursing home facility or a hospital facility. Good documentation, good assessment skills, and identification of the onset of pressure ulcers, and understanding how those pressure ulcers start and how they can be prevented, all go into play with an algorithm like this. And so it's very interesting to see how just instituting some kind of a systemized process, the systemization of a treatment program, can make it much more effective. Because once you've got it in a systemized mode, you can start testing changes very easily. You can look and see if we can move step forward to step two and make a difference, or if we can slightly tweak one of the steps along the way. It's very easy to see once you have everybody doing things the same way. It's very easy to see that if you make a slight change, what effect that may have. And so, but you have to have a systemized process. You just can't have one unit doing one thing and because they've got a staff that is much more understanding and maybe a charge nurse there that's really on the warpath about preventing pressure ulcers, and you have on the other side, in another unit, somebody who's just not quite as aware of the issue, you can have completely different ways of dealing with things. And so you really need to have that kind of a systemized approach, some kind of a standardized algorithm that you can follow to keep track of these things. So I'm very interested to see other facilities do these kinds of things and present these kinds of papers, because it really comes down to some of the most basic nursing care interventions that can make such a huge difference for these patients. And we are very busy. We have sometimes too many patients, but we need to find a way to get some of these things done. And, turning a patient is something that can be handled by a non-licensed staff member once you've assessed the patient's need that, because they can't do it on their own. And we need to make sure that we are on top of that. And sometimes it's just a question of just a quick follow-up, and you can get your aides or your assistants or whoever to go in there and take care of moving that patient to a different position. We're going to talk about that some more in the tip of the week, but I just wanted to point out this particular story because, you know, 90% reduction in pressure ulcers is significant. I don't care who you are. And so I think that everybody should be striving for that kind of a reduction because, quite frankly, once somebody's in our care, we shouldn't be having them have any increase in the pressure ulcers that they have or formation of new pressure ulcers just because we have them in our care. There's no excuse for it at that point. And I think that's what Medicare has been saying with this change in their billing practice. So in case you haven't figured it out yet, for the tip and trick of the week this week, we're going to be talking about pressure ulcers. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the risk factors, how to identify and assess them, and also briefly a little bit about prevention. There's so much information out there. If you're working in a facility right now, you've got probably more than you want at your fingertips if you just ask for it. Just go ahead and contact your local training individual at your facility and see if you can follow up on what documentation information they have available. If not, I have provided a ton of links right here. The three websites that I chose have links to a myriad of additional information. One of them is set up very much like its self-training course, so you can follow through it step by step by step and really gain a lot of information. So I urge you to head over and check out the links in the show notes for this episode. You'll find that under the category of nursing podcasts at the Nursing Show site at nursingshow.com, and you'll want to make sure that you check out those links for yourself. Of course, I can only do a very brief overview here, but let's get right on into it. First of all, what do we want to know about pressure ulcers? First of all, well, we understand the risk factors for pressure ulcers. We can go a long way towards preventing them. Pressure ulcers occur basically because for some reason, usually due to pressure over a bony prominence, blood flow to the skin is cut off for a period of time. And as that blood flow is cut off, skin and tissue around that region begin to die from lack of blood flow. Patients who are able to move well on their own and shift their weight from time to time, we do it unconsciously as adults or children. You know, we are able to do that. And as people age, however, or as people have illnesses that decrease their level of mobility, the formation of pressure ulcers becomes more and more prevalent. Some of the things that we see in addition to pressure are things that cause friction repeatedly over an area or pulling against the skin tissue itself. So when we move patients who are immobile, if we are not careful when we move them, especially elderly patients who have decreased connective tissue and decreased subcutaneous fat, the skin becomes much more fragile and can be torn in that way. And then once a wound is present, it becomes more easy to cause pressure ulcers. Moisture, the presence of moisture can cause increased skin breakdown. And of course, then that skin becomes much more prevalent to having a formation of an ulcer when pressure is applied to it on a repeated basis. And so patients who are incontinent or patients that have been involved in some kind of an environmental event where their clothing is wet, we need to get them out of that wet clothing because over time, if we allow them to sit in an emergency department waiting room for a period of time because they can't be treated right away, we can find that they have formation of pressure ulcers just from waiting for treatment. Also, the caregiver is a big step in the direction. So we need to educate family members and also educate our assistive personnel in a nursing home facility or in a hospital facility on exactly how easy it is to prevent pressure ulcers and conversely, how easy it is to just allow them to happen. So the willingness of a caregiver to get out there and do something about the formation of a pressure ulcer is also a risk factor. Risk factors that are directed directly at the patient. Patients with impaired mobility, as I said, if they can't move themselves around effectively, then they can't shift their weight and get the weight of their body off of those bony prominences, such as the sacrum, the hips, the heels, the shoulder blades. All of these are places where we can find increased risk for skin breakdown. Patients with limited sensory perception in an area. So if they are patients who have a neuropathy of some kind, then these patients are less likely to feel pain or feel the discomfort and know that they need to shift their weight. Patients of older age, because of the changes that are inherent in our anatomy and physiology as we age, patients with altered nutrition, patients who have poor nutrition, decreased protein in their diet, all of these can go towards causing problems. Anybody with any kind of hemodynamic compromise or even emotional stress can cause issues. Anything that causes the body's systems to go into that fight or flight mode to cause an activation of the sympathetic nervous system is going to cause reduced blood flow to the skin. It's one of the things the body does is shunt blood from the skin to the internal organs. That reduced blood flow over time will cause an increased risk. So there are a lot of things that can be comorbid conditions, but those are just some of them that you should be aware of. A thorough assessment is called for in all of your patients as soon as you get them. You should be looking for signs of pressure ulcer formation, especially in high-risk groups, patients coming in from a nursing home or returning to a nursing home from a stay at the hospital. All should be carefully assessed with special attention towards their bony prominences, as we discussed, the occiput, the ears, scapula, any spinous process, shoulder, elbow, you know, the hips, the sacrum, the knees, the heels, even the toes, depending on how that patient has been laying and wherever they are, can all be at risk for the formation of pressure ulcers. Pressure ulcers are staged at four stages. A stage one pressure ulcer is an observable change in the way the skin looks. Is it blanchable? Do you see the skin temperature has changed? It's suddenly there's a warm area or an area that feels unusually cool compared to the surrounding skin. Is there change in the way the skin feels to the touch, or is there change in the patient's sensation compared to surrounding skin? All of these can be an indication of a problem. A persistent area of redness in lightly pigmented skin. In dark-skinned individuals, you may find that it may appear darker than surrounding tissue. And so you can call that a stage one pressure ulcer. Stage two pressure ulcer is a partial thickness problem where we actually are starting to lose layers of skin involving either the upper layer, the epidermis, or the underlying dermis is a stage two. It's a partial thickness. Stage three is a full thickness skin loss. We're actually going to be losing all of the layers of the skin, and we actually are able to visualize the underlying connective tissue, the fascia underneath the skin. This is also could be involving some damage to subcutaneous tissues as well because we've lost all of the skin in a given area. Stage four, full thickness with loss to underlying structures. So there's now damage to underlying bone, muscle, or other connective tissues below the level of the skin. All of these areas, all of these are going to be involved in a full thickness stage four pressure ulcer. There's a lot of information and pictures and graphics available at the sites that I've linked to. So I urge you to take a look at some of the pictures and drawings that are associated with staging pressure ulcers and get to know your wound care nurses in your facilities. Most of the facilities, at least the larger ones, will have a dedicated wound care nurse who is much more up on how to stage pressure ulcers. So learn from them, tap into their knowledge, and learn from what they have to say. Prevention of pressure ulcers really comes down to, from our standpoint, some pretty simple nursing interventions. And it requires some additional attention on our part for these patients, but it doesn't necessarily have to take up a huge amount of our time if we work it into our schedule and our assessment program with their patients on a daily basis and work with our assistive personnel to make sure that the job's getting done. We can do this. We should be working with our at-risk patients first and then looking at patients that are in other risk categories second. but we need to make sure that we're doing, first of all, a careful skin assessment on a regular basis. By shift, we should be looking at our at-risk patients very carefully, because it doesn't take more than an hour or two of skin compression to begin the formation of a stage one pressure ulcer. And that can happen in the midst of a shift. You examine them at the beginning of the shift, you do a routine assessment, everything's fine, time gets away from you, but the time the next shift gets there, they just can't assume that you've looked at it recently. The next shift needs to do a quick and systematic skin assessment of these patients. We need to reduce their pressure points on a regular basis. And this means we need to frequently turn these patients. We need to learn how to position them carefully so that we are trying to avoid shear on these patients. So if we're going to prop them up in bed, we need to do so in such a way that we're not sliding them down because we're propping them up too high. As the patient slides down in bed, we apply more friction and we apply shear and tension to the surface skin. And we need to use appropriate surfaces, you know, changing the materials in which we're putting these patients. You know, a chair is a great place to put somebody to sit if we want to get them out of bed and they can't stand on their own for a period of time. But when we're going to sit them in a chair, we need to make sure we have a chair with appropriate cushioning and that we're moving them and changing their position regularly. We need to also increase their mobility level. This is all about bringing them back to some optimum level of health for that individual. And no matter what their level of mobility is currently, we need to do what we can to increase that. And patients, we know, are going to resist moving around. At least some of them are. And we can enlist some assistance from our PT and OT staff, but we also need to be working with our patients directly, our patients' family members, to encourage them to get up and move around as they are able. A patient who has increased mobility, increased strength, and increased ability to get themselves moved are going to be much less at risk for the formation of a pressure ulcer. Again, we need to reduce any moisture that's going to be in contact with their skin. We need to keep them clean and dry. We need to make sure that we're cleaning them up quickly and completely. If we do have a patient who has soiled themselves in some way, we need to work carefully and monitor our patients carefully if they have problems with urinary or fecal incontinence. And we need to make sure we are providing a moisture barrier on the skin when they are incontinent. So use of appropriate creams and ointments are really valuable here to help protect the skin. We also need to minimize the dryness of the skin. So we need to make sure the skin is moisturized. This is going to come into play because the skin is fragile and we can keep it moisturized. It's less fragile. So it's less apt to tear or to respond to friction or that shearing tension that we might see in patients. So we need to make sure that we are monitoring our patients carefully. If they have very dry skin, we may need to address that just as much as we address patients with too much moisture around their skin. Again, preventing friction and shear, moving patients carefully and appropriately. We can slide them, but using a draw sheet or something to do that rather than sliding them directly across the sheets is a good way to do that. Using some kind of a ceiling lift, if you have that available, or other device, is a great way to do that as well. Improve the patient's nutrition is always important. We want a good diet with good protein and calorie content, good vitamin intake, and we want to make sure that we are helping them with meals if they have mobility issues. This is all important. Elderly patients sometimes don't want to eat, don't feel like they're that hungry. We need to provide them a good environment where they feel like eating, and that may be providing some kind of a social setting. People often associate food with social settings, so provide them an opportunity to have their meals with a family member or a guest. Talk to their family members about it. Perhaps arrange your opportunities to go in and do some care around the room at the same time that they're going to have their meal, so that you can provide them some company while they're eating. No one likes eating alone, so give them an opportunity to not eat alone. Also, we want to make sure that they have adequate fluids coming in, and we want to make sure that we educate the patients and their family members about how to care for and prevent pressure ulcers. So that's the quick overview of pressure ulcers. Again, I urge you to follow up on the links in the show notes because that is going to be the best place for you to find the things you need to get this particular problem underway in your particular facility. Learning and education is really what it's all about. And I, you know, in this particular regard, I think there can never be too much. We really need to keep this particular topic in the forefront of our minds with every single patient. Even if our patient population is not particularly at risk, everyone could have a risk factor crop up in the formation. Even pediatric patients who are immobile for a period of time, we need to make sure that we're monitoring them just as carefully as we might an elderly patient. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank everybody for checking out the show this week and remind all of you that you'll find links to everything we talked about, the news items, and the links for information on pressure ulcers all over at The Nursing Show site in the show notes category. And you'll find that in the category for nursing podcasts over in the left-hand column of The Nursing Show site. And of course, you can also follow up really well if you're on the Nursing Show newsletter. So I urge you to sign up for the newsletter and you'll get all of these links sent directly to you every week with the Nursing Show update. And it's a great way to keep in touch with the Nursing Show. And it's a great way to share the Nursing Show with somebody else who you'd like to say, hey, check out this particular episode. Don't forget, you can always get back in touch with me. You can either leave a comment directly over at the Nursing Show blog. It's a great way to keep in touch with me and also share your ideas with the other listeners and start a little bit of a conversation there. So you can leave a comment using the link at the bottom of each and every article over there. You can also follow up by getting in touch with me directly. Send those emails in to comments@nursingshow.com. It's always great to hear from all of you. That's going to wrap up things. I'm going to close out with some PodSafe music from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. This particular song is from an artist we've played a lot here on the show, Matthew Ebel, and his song, Wasting My Time. I hope you don't feel like you're wasting your time here at The Nursing Show. I certainly enjoy sharing this information with you and hearing back from all of you, and I hope we hear a lot more from you here in the future. I'll just leave you all with the thought that I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I want to make sure you all remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
How can you love me when you don't know who I am? These pages got a lot more feeling from a bloodstained, dirty hand. And all I know is I was blind to the view. keep it under my skin.